All right, before we get into today's episode, if you own a home improvement business, listen closely. You didn't start your company to grind 60 hours a week, chasing leads, stressing over jobs, and barely making money. You started it to win, to build freedom, wealth, and a business that actually works for you. That's exactly what Accelerate Live is all about. On February 10th and 11th, we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Accelerate Live in Clearwater Beach, Florida, and it's going to be our biggest and, dare I say, best event ever. Two full days of real strategies, powerful workshops, and game-changing conversations with the smartest contractors in the country. This isn't theory, it's what's working right now in lead generation, sales, production, hiring, and profitability. Everything you need to grow faster and smarter in 2026. And let me be clear, listening to this podcast is great, but being at Accelerate Live is where the breakthroughs actually happen. Every year, people leave this event with excitement, a clear plan, new connections, and the confidence to take their business to the next level. But here's the deal. We always sell out. Early bird pricing is available right now. And if you're serious about blowing 2026 out of the water, bring your leadership team. Not only do we have a special breakout session just for them, we've got special discounted pricing as well. Trust me, the more aligned you are, the faster things change. Go to accelerateevent.com, grab your tickets, and use promo code podcast26. Do it now. accelerateevent.com, promo code podcast26. Now let's get into today's episode.
I started with an absolute business model, a business plan. I call that the roadmap. And that's what I worked on all the time. In each block, the right people, the team, the right salespeople, the right product, the right pricing, the right customer love. 4 years later, nothing looked the same. People were making so much money, they couldn't imagine. We were doing around $55 million when a handful of the private equity people came around looking. And we got to about 16.5% EBITDA. And one day it all happened and everybody went home in a limousine. And we did it in 4 years instead of five. The truth is, if you've got a good roadmap, it's not that hard.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Today with me is an old friend, newly crowned legend of the industry, but you were a legend to me when I first met you. Joe Tallman is here with us today. Joe, welcome.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's great to be with you. And thanks for your nice words there. I've always thought the world of you and the impact you've had on our industry, helping so many people. And it's always great to be with you and hang out with you. And so here we are today.
Yeah. Thank you. So, we were just talking about the Legends Awards ceremony that happened recently. You were, what do they call it? Inducted from Dave Yoho, which is high praise. Dave is, this is not easy to get high praise from Dave, is it?
Not really. You got to do something pretty special.
You got to do something special.
Yeah, I'll just say that.
Yeah. You've been here before, but it's been a long time. Give everybody your, if you don't mind, give everybody the 2 minute backstory on Joe Tallman, because you're about as connected as it gets in this industry and people should know who you are.
Well, this year is actually my 40th anniversary of being in the industry. I made my very first in-home sale with windows, replacement windows, the third week of January, 1985. And it's just hard to believe, but that's in a blink of time. I went from a young man to an old man. How about that? But over those years, I was very excited to be part of some exciting projects. You know, we built a great company in Ohio, and at one time we were the largest high-end replacement window company in the state. And although we did have some branches, you know, outside the state, we always considered ourselves primarily an Ohio company. But eventually that company was sold to some investors that had their own ideas, and that was great. And I did some consulting for about 7 or 8 years, traveled the country, met some extraordinary people, some people with a lot of problems, some people with a few problems, and we helped them do incredible things. And I loved that. And along the way, one of the people I met wanted me to become involved in their company. So I ended up in Chicago at a very large company that made a very small profit. And we worked out an arrangement, let's say. And the goal was to build that company and have at least about 16 to 18% EBITDA. And then hopefully sell it to investors and everybody go home in a limousine. That was the plan. In about 5 years, that was a 5-year plan. And so what happened was lots of fun, lots of challenges. And the challenges were when I got there, we had 66 salespeople. And in about 6 to 9 months, we had about 14. So when we say challenges, yeah, a lot of folks did not want to participate, which is normal with change and innovation. But we rebuilt the company. We were doing around $55 million when a handful of the private equity people came around looking. And we got it to about 16.5% EBITDA. And one day it all happened and everybody went home in a limousine. But we did it, and we did it in 4 years instead of 5. Since then, you know, I talk to a lot of people in the industry. I don't do much work. I try to stay connected. I love listening to the younger people with their enthusiasm for the industry, for the business, for their technology interest. So I'm pretty much retired. I can be found on the beaches at Hilton Head most of the year. Summertime, you can track me down in Columbus, Ohio. I've got 3 grandkids here, 2 beautiful princesses and a little boy, 5, grandson. And they're my life. So I take an hour or so a week out of that and occasionally talk to wonderful people around the business, including yourself. And so that's what's been happening. And it's been exciting.
How fun. Good for you, my friend. Good for you. You've worked your ass off in this industry. One of the hardest working people in the industry. Hey, let's start with profit. So, you know, Dave Yoho Associates did a survey a few years back. When you see the results on paper, they're shocking, like shocking. 41% of companies surveyed had a pre-tax net profit of 3% or less. Shocking. But it's true. I mean, that's what's going on in the industry. I've looked at hundreds of P&Ls, and most of them are just a mess. And the reality of it is, and you know, my friend and business partner, Mark Curry, is that nobody ever taught us how to be profitable in this business, how to make money, taught us how to sell. Oh my God, the selling systems in this industry are, you know, second to none. But when it comes to making money, it's tough. So what did you do? What were some of the things that you did to go from very little profit to a very good profit of 16.5%?
Well, first, let me just say you're dead on. You know, one of the sad things that I did discover during my consulting years and then helping friends around the country, you know, when I studied their P&Ls, very few people make appropriate profit for the risk they're taking. The problem in our industry is we're just not cash and carry. You know, we have ongoing liability and risk. Sometimes people get sued over projects that are years old and they didn't make any money on the project or they didn't make an appropriate amount of profit. And what you said is true. The reason is that through the early days and what's been handed down decade after decade, kind of through tribal knowledge, is about selling. And the big fear was people don't know how to sell. And that was a reasonable fear because most people didn't. And there was this theory that kind of got develop that if we get the company big enough, certainly there has to be some profit in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, that just isn't true. Now, why did that exist? Why does it still exist in 2025? Because our industry, unlike others, is primarily just built on an entrepreneurial spirited individual. I've met many, many people. They've not been to business school. They don't have advanced educations, particularly in the business space. Most owners I've met, except at the very large companies, are very unfamiliar with reading a financial statement. And so if you can't read a financial statement, it makes it very difficult to make a profit. So the first thing you have to do to really get your business profitable is you have to believe it's possible. I've got to go to one of my core tenets. We act in accordance with what we believe. And when a person's doing 10 million a year and they think, well, I take $300,000 out and at the end of the year, I got 4%. I guess that's pretty good. It's not. And you don't believe more is possible because you haven't done it. And because you're not well connected in mastermind groups, groups like yours and some of the others, you don't know there's people out there, not a lot of them, but there's good people making 15 to 20% and making appropriate levels of profit for the great risk of touching and altering somebody's home. So step one is you got to know it's possible. And I'm here to tell you it's possible. And then you got to believe it because we got to act in accordance with what we believe. So here are the keys. The first thing I look at to understand how to get a company profitable, and let's take the case study from Chicago. The first problem was that the gross profit was not in a place that it would even allow to make the company profitable. So there's this theory among people in our industry, again, we can outrun problems if we do volume at low price or lower price. I don't mean discount. I don't mean giveaway. But the problem is you can't make 10% to yourself after paying yourself an acceptable compensation if there's not enough gross margin to hit 10% on the bottom anyway. And so most people miss the gross margin. Now, why? Here's why they miss the gross margin. It's because they're afraid of price. People, I can't tell, 100 people probably told me, Joe, I'd raise my price. I can't. And I want to tell you something. That's ridiculous. But see, they don't and they can't because of what they believe. They believe they can't, so they don't.
Right.
The truth of the matter is, without getting deep in the weeds, Renewal by Anderson proved that if you can build credibility, if you can build trust, if you can build a human connection during a presentation, not a salesperson pitching a customer transactional, but build a good human connection, you can get any price. My goodness, I heard the other day someone say they got a quote, someone right here in my hometown in Columbus, Ohio, is like $3,300 a window for just up and down double hung windows. But the point is this, you've got to start with proper pricing. Most people don't. Here's what I'll tell you. If you're trying to grow your business and you want to be a little more aggressive with marketing, you got to have room for the marketing budget.
Yeah.
Now, I advise personally a 66% gross margin. And I have people say, oh my goodness, Joe, you are nuts. You are flat out crazy. But that's what I did in Chicago. We went straight to a 66% gross margin. That's what pretty much ran off all those salespeople I told you about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They freaked out.
The second thing that was necessary to get that company to great profitability was that whether those people left or not, they had to go because they were never going to believe in the price. They would only complain. So then I stopped completely hiring any salespeople from the industry. And I look for high integrity people who were looking for an opportunity in life. They had a little entrepreneurial spirit. I think of a great guy that we hired. He came in, he had been out of college a couple, 3 years, and he was working for one of the major companies like the big rent truck companies. Anyway, he was in a management program and he had this dream of climbing the ladder. But after a few years, he realized they weren't dying off near the top of the ladder, so there wasn't really much upward mobility. And he's working 60 hours a week in that management development program, and he's making $60,000 max. And when he found out he could make 150, 200, and we showed him people who were doing better, not the first week, but the first year and a half or so, Anyway, the guy starts making 100, then 150, 200. I got a text from this individual probably a handful of months ago is all, this year, saying, Joe, thanks. You changed my life. You know, I've got three kids now. We bought a beautiful home. Life is so good. But see, if he had come from a competitor, he'd have come in and tried to tell me why all my ideas are no good and why his ideas are better and about his mentors and his former bosses and what a fuss. And I just didn't have enough time for those kind of people. And that was huge in getting a sales force, you know, on rocket fuel and running at a highly effective and profitable level. So we had to get the pricing right. We had to get the people right. The people, we're a people dependent business. Yeah. And, you know, there's failures in some of these acquisitions around the country. Most people have heard a little bit about it. Some have heard a lot. Some haven't heard a word. But the problem is a lot of the really, really brilliant business people can't comprehend how people dependent our businesses are. The right people that build the right vision, that get people to want to run with them and fulfill the vision and be part of that and be excited about it. It's not just say, go to work, do your job, we'll check in on Friday on the spreadsheet. And so I knew that. So getting great people was really, really important. Now, the next thing was you really got to have really great and hopefully unique products. You see, in our industry, as you well know, there are many people out there selling such generic products, they don't know how to get extraordinary value. And here's what I discovered. I'm going to take you back to 9/11. And when business stopped, it just stopped in America. Everywhere it stopped. Car dealership, you know, people were all walking around in a fog. We didn't know what to do. And then as, you know, a few weeks passed, everybody was calling each other, talking, is it okay to advertise again? Can we get back to working? Well, how do we work with people? And so some consultants for one of the big national TV networks hired a consulting group, and they did a study of several thousand people. And they said, people are willing to buy, but they want to feel like they're getting an extraordinary value. And then when we had the great housing crash and the stock market crash, the housing bubble and all that happened, same kind of calamities. Again, the consultants talked to thousands of homeowners and they said, oh, we'll buy. But with all that's happened, we want to feel like we're getting extraordinary value for our money. Now, how can you give somebody extraordinary value, get them excited about investing in their home? So I teach, you know, it's not about getting excited to buy from me. It's about getting excited about investing in your home, Mr. Customer. Now, to do that, of course, I've got to have something I can get excited about. If I'm selling a window that 9 other people in town are selling, if I'm selling siding that 15 other people in town are selling, that's more challenging. Not impossible, but the average owner or sales manager doesn't know how to build a dynamic, interesting presentation that's got what I call at least 3 to 4 wow moments, where you show something and explain it and the benefit of it so that the homeowner down the road says, that's exactly what I want. Wow, that's impressive. Wow, I like that. Wow, that's exactly the way I want to see it. Think about the bathroom space. I created some training material and I said, how many of you have this conversation? And you say, folks, if we could create a bathroom, a tub, shower, fixtures, this area that every single morning you walked in there and it put a smile on your face, would you like it or would you love it if I could do something like that for you? People say, oh, we'd love it. Wouldn't it be great to get out of bed, go inside that bathroom, and just have a smile on your face? Now tell me, right now, you go in that bathroom every morning, does it put a smile on your face? And they go, no, Joe, it doesn't. But see, I got something to get excited about myself so then I can help them get a little excited, right? And so now I've got great products. I've got some unique things. I've built a conversation with the client that we interact with that leans more emotional than, let me tell you, the acrylic chemical composition. I mean, I've heard some presentations that are so technical, you think the salesperson is trying to get the homeowner in the business. I mean, people don't want to get in the business. They only need enough to place an order. It's like the guy who wants to talk about how thick their vinyl siding is. Well, we've got 44 mil and our competitors are selling a 42 mil. The naked eye can't see the difference in 2 mil thickness. More importantly, no one ever bought siding for their home because of the mil thickness. They only bought it for one reason, the outcome. You got to sell the outcome. That's a big part of what I did in Chicago. We changed all the sales messaging to sell the outcome. How beautiful it's going to be. How good it's going to feel when you drive down the street and you're ready to pull in your driveway and you're staring at the best looking house on the block, man. How good is that going to be, folks? I mean, think you're out there in the yard cutting the grass and you look up at your house and you say, best decision I ever made. And so we create a dynamic for the salespeople to be enthusiastic. So we had to change products in Chicago. We had to get people enthused about what we do. And now, Brian, this is going to shock you. When I got there the first day, they had like a 3.4 Google rating. And three of the top 10 reviews said, I would give this company a 0-star rating.
If I could.
But Google won't let me.
Right.
We didn't have reputation. We didn't have anything. So our first company meeting, we had like 112 people there. And I told them, I said, we're going to get to 2,000 five-star reviews. And all of zero people, believe me, they were snickering and laughing. Who's this new guy running the company? Who's this new guy? Oh, he don't know. That's not how we do things. We just make sales, turn it over and whatever. So the next thing I had to do was to get a commitment to extraordinary customer experience. Mm-hmm. And then you get your team focused. And here's what you got to do with which most owners don't want to do. When people won't get on the team and share your vision. Now, first, I got to back up. You've got to have a vision
to
share. Mm-hmm. And your vision has to be worthy of people being excited about it. But let's suppose you do. If you've got people that can't get enthused, they don't want to run towards the sun with you. You just got to let them go. You say, Joe, but she's been with me 12 years or he's been with me for 8 years. I don't care. They're not willing to run towards the light with you. You say, I'm going on a marathon. And in the victory thing, when we break through that tape, man, we are all going to do so good. It's going to be so exciting. And they got to want to run with you and you got to get rid of them. So we had to build a new culture. We started a concierge service inside customer service. We did things like this. No installer could leave the house until they called customer service concierge from inside the house and reviewed a checklist. Next, we talked to the homeowner. If there was anything that wasn't just right, we're not going to wait 2 or 3 days till they call us, email us. We're going to know right then, and right then we're going to attack it. And if everything's great, and we did have good installers, and most of the time everything was great, we went right for the review right there while the installer was there, the homeowner was there, the homeowner's at their highest peak of emotion.
Yep.
And we had just the shortest little bitty script, and we asked them, if I texted you the link to a couple review sites on your phone right this very minute, could you do it for me right now? Right now. And I'd say, now I got my computer up. I can see if you do it right now, I'll get noticed. Can you do it right now? How many times I just say right now? It's pretty clear.
Oh,
And we tell them just 3 or 4 sentences. You don't have to write a whole bunch. Just talk about your experience in your own words. Well, I want to tell you something. The other day, so 3.4, I think it was, my marketing manager, who's still with the company, was all excited and sent me a text message. I got him to 4.7, which was like dentistry without Novocaine.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But we just got those things rolling in. Here's what else we did. We took the same thing we did with those installers. Can't leave the inside of the house without calling. Can't call from the truck. Can't call from the front yard. Got to be standing in the living room or the kitchen. We did the same thing on service calls. The service tech couldn't leave until he called the office and ran down the checklist with concierge. And then we put the homeowner on the phone. And here's what we said to that person. Are you 100% satisfied now that our tech's been out there to take care of you? And they'd say, oh, yeah, he was great. Did a wonderful job. So pleased. Here's the line. They'd say, well, let me ask you, in good conscience, could you now give us a 5-star review? Oh, sure I could. Bam. So if I text you two links right now to your phone and we go through the same thing and they just started coming. The message I got from the marketing manager, they've kept it going. And you know how hard it is to move when you've got thousands of reviews to move from 4.4 to 4.5 or 4.7 to 4.8. So it was 4.7 a couple years ago. They just bumped up finally to 4.8 by staying on the path, right? So it was all these things together. And then it was about managing budgets. So what floors me is the owners that use QuickBooks and they don't have the percentages turned on. And I've had people, and not long ago, a guy from Denver called me and said, you don't know me, but we got a friend in Texas. And he said, well, send me your financials. So I called him back. I said, man, I can't do anything with this stuff. Go in there, click, turn on the percentages. Why aren't you looking at the percentages? It says here that your labor cost is X dollars. That doesn't mean anything to me. And I'm not going to sit here and do all the math on all these things. So he sends it back. Oh, his gross margin's 42% because materials and labor are way out of whack. Or the price point, which is really what it turned out to be, was way out of whack. But if owners are not looking at percentages, go to marketing. I had somebody recently, again, I get calls from people that are old friends from 40 years, and sometimes somebody knows somebody and say, well, maybe Joe Tomlin could help you. And so I just talked to him a little bit. I'm not trying to build a consulting practice. I'm retired. But here's the thing. Somebody told me last month their marketing percent was 35%. I was like, what's wrong with you? I just asked him, what's wrong with you? That doesn't even make sense. So you've got to have those percentages. You've got to have some standards. And I know you and Mark, who are phenomenal at this stuff, Mark's an old friend of mine, just the highest respect for you guys, is trying to help people understand these things.
Yeah.
But then you check. So we had to go in there and get some of these things in line. You know, I like to use red light, green light, yellow light. And we used I360 and we did that and all kinds of things. I had some phenomenal talent in-house. And we code things so they'd show up in reports, red, yellow, and shades of green. And so the question in marketing is, green, can we do it more? Yellow, are we leaning towards green or are we leaning towards red? Yellows, we got to have a conversation about. And our only goal with yellow, get it into green. How are we going to do that? And I would like to lead these conversations with nothing but questions. Too many owners give out too many answers. People leave those meetings and they say, he don't know what my problems are, what we're going through, blah, blah, blah. And they don't like that. You ask them questions. They come up with answers. They like their answers. Then you say, go do it. Go do it. Red is you do real bad. And so you got to say, how many months should we like have Valpak in this one example? Valpak's been a great product for lots and lots of people. But I saw a company was running about a 45% cost of marketing in Valpak. I said, how many months you figure you should run a 45% marketing on this piece? Huh? Before we say this baby is dead.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to be a little more critical of these things and then you build it to a profit. Here's what you can't do. Too many people in our industry. I mean, it's a human nature thing. It's not bad people, but it's one of those things we got to know about and then not do. And that is called the hope theory. Sales managers are always hoping the guys aren't selling. I sure hope they start selling. They'll call them up. Man, you got to get going. Man, you got to close some deals. Man, you got to do this. You got to do that. Well, that's not training. That guy didn't get any better. He knows or she knows. Yeah, I need to sell some more. I didn't need you. Oh my gosh. Now I can see you said I got to sell more. Oh my goodness. I'm so smart. No. And you can't say, man, I sure hope marketing gets that cost down soon. I hope they get, you know, people do this. I hope things get better. And this, I call it the hope theory. And they just sit back and hope month after month. You know, a dear friend of mine from the old days had a company and he was just real. He was doing $3.5 million, making 10% and doing a good job. But he was associating with people that were doing, you know, 12 million, 20 million, 30 million and on, and felt inferior because he wasn't doing the big numbers. No reason for that because he was doing good. He was in a southern market where, you know, if you take out 350 and you got another 350 left in the till, you're doing pretty good. And you can grow that. but he decided to go for volume for vanity.
Yeah.
And got to 10, 12 million. The first year lost a million. The next year lost another million. And then the whole thing fell under. So unfortunately, when you're not profitable enough, here's what I like to say. People making 2, 3, 3.5%, 4%, 5%, I don't care. You're too close to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So to go from those numbers, which the massive percent of people are at, to 15, it's so much easier to make a few mistakes and then fall to zero.
Yeah.
That's why you got to get, see, that's another reason why you got to get away from close to zero. See, if you're 15, have a bad year and you only do 11, okay. If you're doing 18 and you have a bad year and drop to 14, okay. If you have a really bad year and you're at 4.5 and suddenly you're like 1, 1.5, you're in trouble. And you're in trouble because at that level of profit, your cash management is 0.0. All of your money is always tied up. You're always stressing over money. So, you know, I started with an absolute business model, a business plan. I call that the roadmap. And then that's what I worked on all the time. And each block, you know, the right people, the team, the right salespeople, the right product, the right pricing, the right customer love. I mean, love those customers and get those reviews because they love you back. 4 years later, nothing looked the same. Man, and it was exciting. You know, it was my last big, big thing to do. And it was fun. It was exciting. And everybody was happy. People were making so much money. They couldn't imagine. It went from guys selling $1.1 million, $1.2 million, thinking they were big shots. We couldn't even keep people like that. We couldn't even keep people with that level of net sales, right? So that's a little bit of it. I mean, I don't want to bore you too bad or your people, but that are going to listen and watch. But, you know, the truth is, if you've got a good roadmap, it's not that hard. But what I discovered meeting good, good people, it's just so many people don't have the roadmap. They got in from sales and they knew something about sales and they had an entrepreneurial spirit, or they got in on the install side and they were craftsmen and did the best work, didn't know about sales, but in both cases, rarely knew anything about business. I asked a group in a management meeting I did a conference call with a few months back, what's the last book on leadership or management? I want you all texted into the chat. Big group. Nobody, last 90 days and you haven't read one book? How about listen to a book on Audible? Not one. I interviewed somebody for a very high position in the company as a courtesy to a really good friend. And I asked this guy, so you're applying to be the CEO of this company, big company. What's the last book you've read on leadership? CEOs are leaders, they're visionaries. Well, you know, have you ever read Maxwell? You know, I probably got 8 Maxwell books on my shelf. Got 150 books, got to have 8 Maxwell books. They've only written like 15. I said, have you ever read or even listened to 5 Levels of Leadership? Yeah, that one. Some years back. Yeah. I said, what do you remember about it? Well, you know, that was a little while back. You know. And I said, man, if you can't remember anything, it doesn't matter if you read it. It's like that old philosopher that said to know and not do is the same as not knowing. You're the same as the guy that don't know. Mm-hmm. So to have read the book, I said, that's to me, I've read that book 3 times. It's so simple, clear, and powerful. I think every owner, every entry line manager, everybody in our industry has got a manager who didn't go to college and study business or management, or hasn't gone to all kinds of sophisticated webinars and seminars and weekend events and things on leadership and management, should read the 5 levels because it crushes leadership. And then, of course, the 21 immutable laws of leadership. But yet, you know, people say, yeah, I know that's important, but I'm a little busy running in circles right now, not getting anything done. And I never understood that, because decades ago, somebody told me if you got up in the morning and you read 15 minutes every single morning at 6 a.m., you'll read a whole bunch of books a year. Also said, if you read 12 books a year in 1 year, you'll look at yourself different in the mirror. In 2 years, other people will start looking at you differently. And down the road, they won't even recognize you. And that's how I built. I said, man, I'm good for that. 15 minutes every morning. And then when Audible came out, oh my goodness, man, I could do a book every 2 weeks. And sometimes I got to tell you, when we were in Chicago, it was a 6.5 hour drive back to Columbus, Ohio. I would do a book each way. At worst, I'd do a book round trip. And I encourage people, there's so much good stuff today on business and business science, and particularly in leadership, how to be a leader. Too many people are managers. They're doers. They're workers. They don't build vision and they don't build momentum. You know, as Maxwell says, momentum is a business owner's best friend, and momentum usually solves all problems. An energy momentum in an organization is incredible. An energy momentum in a sales team is incredible. You know, there's so many things when the momentum is right. A profit momentum in a business is incredible. But people don't understand, you know, what does it mean to get a team? You know, it's not barking out orders. It's not barking out, you do this, you do that. How come this didn't work? How come we didn't get any leads at this show? What are you going to do? No, that's not how you build momentum. But I can't go into that because Maxwell's already done all the sophisticated work. But what he did was break it down in simple everyday language that weak people like us can just get into and go, yeah, man, I get it. And that's what I try to share with people. And of course, your book, the Seven Secrets of Wealthy I mean, everybody ought to be reading that book. I mean, my goodness, why wouldn't you want to read it? You're in an industry. Why wouldn't you want to read a book, Secrets of How to Be Wealthy in Your Industry? I know people say, Joe, I'm busy running circles, not getting much done, you know. I'm sorry, man. I just kind of got excited there.
I'm just sitting here quiet listening to you, and I've heard you so much. And every time I hear you, I learn so much more. And I would say, you know, I do this every once in a while with these episodes, is I would say, go back, everybody that's listening, this is an episode you got to listen to 4 or 5 times. Put it on, you know, a little faster speed, although Joe already talks pretty fast. You know, one day I had Mark Curry on one side, Scott Berman on the other side. You're on the stage. We're in the back of the room. We both look at each other. Mark turns to me and he says, boy, I just feel like I got out of church on Sunday morning.
Well, I do get a little excited, you know, but see, the entrepreneurial spirit let me just tell you why I get so excited. Because I grew up as a very small child in a very affluent family. Then my father became very, very ill and died. And my mother was a typical 60s mom, ran the household and all that. And she didn't know anything about managing money, didn't get any help with it. And the money disappeared and we became incredibly poor. Let me tell you, embarrassingly poor. And so my life mission was to do something I know it sounds stupid, but I wanted to revive the family name and say, you know, we're not low life nothings. Now, you know, I went to counseling for a number of years because of that thought.
Oh, yeah.
But my point is, let me tell you how poor we were. I went in the Army to get the GI Bill to go to college. And when I got out to go to college, I found out we were so poor, I could have went to Ohio State for free anyway. But I didn't have anybody tell me about that, right?
Yeah.
So where does a person go into a business that you can literally get rich and you don't need to bring $1 million to $2 million to buy a franchise? I know some people that got an orange frog or orange something yogurt franchise. They got $500,000. This was some years ago. I'm sure it's more now. In a 1,200 little square foot bay in a little strip center. Now, how much you sell $4 to $6 worth of yogurt? How much do you think they make a year? No. And I was just doing researches on franchises, man. There are these places out there where people are spending dropping $1 million to $2 million on a bigger size business with a name that draws people in. Well, if you told me I had to put up $1 million or $2 million to get rich in this home improvement industry, I'd never got in it. This is a business where you don't pay the fee up front, but there's a cost. And the cost is your dedication to get smart, to learn business. your dedication to read the books and your dedication to pay attention to the details. And it's just like planting grass, man. You put the seeds in the dirt and you water and you see nothing. And you keep doing it and you see nothing. Then you do it. And week after week, it's like, I don't see nothing. Finally, one day you go by and there's like an eighth of an inch, a little patch of green grass. You go, man, this thing might work. This thing might work. You know, at the end of the year, you got some grass. The end of the second summer, you don't know where it was. All the grass grew in. But you got to be patient with it. But you got to stay diligent. You got to keep doing the work. You got to keep planting the seeds. You got to keep watering the grass. And you got to keep killing them damn weeds. Because then just like in the yard, our business, there's a lot of weeds that'll try to take you over. I call them the gremlins of the mind. And people, owners need to understand, not everybody that's your friend is going to be excited about you on a path to get rich. You will get bad advice. You will get, you know, sometimes ugly advice. And you got to kill them weeds. There were a few people I had to cut out of my life. They were just that negative. People told me, Joe, Columbus, Ohio, another window company, when I went out to start my own, are you crazy? There's no need for another window. This is the most competitive thing in Columbus. You open the newspaper, there's ads everywhere. Back then, the newspaper published its own TV guide product with about 30 pages. Every page was home improvement ads. Half of them were windows. I mean, people that I thought liked me, they were telling me, man, this is never going to work. You're going to really get terrible things are going to happen. Don't do this. Don't do this. But I had a passion. I had a vision. And I would just say this. There's no place Joe Tallman would have gone to become wealthy outside this business. And that's why I'm so passionate, you know, and I've seen other people and I've helped so many people become wealthy in this business. And that's like, you know, when Rick said, feel like I went to church.
Yeah.
This is my church, but it's about helping ordinary people become successful and extraordinary and become wealthy and change their lives, change other people's lives. Because money isn't just about what I get me or my kids or my family. The true thing about wealth, and I want people to understand, wealth gives you the opportunity to make decisions. Good decisions, bad decisions. You make good decisions, you see people in need and you can help them. You see a church, they say we're short $5,000 on the air conditioning thing. Could you help us? And you know, there's so many things you get to do to help. For me, one of my big ones from being in the Army is Tunnel to Towers that helped the disabled vets so well. I mean, they're my favorite. And then children's charities. My wife and I have always been involved with the children. See, my little girl was about a week before she went to kindergarten. She got type 2 children, you know, they called it child diabetes, juvenile diabetes, and started taking 4 insulin shots a day a week before her 5th birthday. Wow. And so, you know, you usually find that out by, you know, bad things are happening and oh my gosh. And then you're in the emergency room in a children's hospital like we were. And you see these remarkable people that love these kids and they work with the parents and they do so much. They have immense love for the kids in these children's hospitals. And so then, you know, one of my goals way back then was, man, I want to have enough money to support these kinds of people because these are the people that are changing lives there. And so, man, that's what gets me excited. That's my church, man. I want my peeps to go out there and do great things.
Yeah. And you and I, we're in total alignment. That's exactly what we're doing here at the Wealthy Contractor is some of the same stuff. I don't think I'm quite as good a preacher as you are, but I try.
You're a good one.
But we talk about some of the same stuff, and it's interesting how there's really nothing new out there, you know, because all of the stuff that you were talking about it's all classic, you know, personal development. You want to become wealthy, read about wealth.
Yes.
Be around wealth, do the things that wealthy people do, and make yourself into that person. Because if you can't make yourself into that person, it's just never going to happen. Anyway, Joe, this has been awesome. We didn't even get to, I started to write down, as you were talking, I wrote down some notes. And we have 3 or 4 other episodes. Can you come back in, you know, can I maybe
buddy.
In a couple months and let's talk sales and then we could talk because, you know, as good a turnaround as you did at that place and focus on profit, you're equally as adept at sales. You're equally as adept at marketing. And so I think there's a lot more that you and I can discuss. So I'm going to leave it here because, again, to the listener, go back and listen to this one three or four times. This is a man that's been in the industry for 40 years and has done everything, seen everything. I don't think there's anything in this industry you've probably not seen, my friend.
Well, I don't know. I tell you, I've seen a lot. And, you know, I like to jokingly tell people, and I was also an experimenter, you know, I tried a lot of things. And I told people, I perfected about 100 things in this business. Absolutely perfected. They don't work. Not one of them. You don't need to try them. They'll never work. They'll never work for anybody. And so one day I listed a whole bunch of these things. I put it on a piece of paper. I said, I need to carry this around and just make sure I don't do any of these things. I'll probably do a lot better if I just don't check that. Yeah, I'm not doing anything on the list and I'm ahead. But and also with consulting and working around folks and listening, you know, it's one of the things when these meetings and like at your meetings, people need to go there and listen and they need to be good at asking questions. What I've discovered, I just got to say something about the big meetings and stuff. Such a good thing to go to as many as you can. But most people want to go there and tell their story. And I will tell you something, even my story, you know, our stories aren't that interesting to anybody but ourselves, really. Go to these things and ask people, hey, man, how do you do what you do? I heard, you know, what's your business? What's your volume? How, you know, tell me something good about what you do. And you'll meet interesting people. And you see that, see, you'll use the reverse aspect of telling them about you, which they don't want to hear. But guess what they want to do? They want to tell you about them. And so go around, just talk, meet people, say, hey, I'm Joe Tallman. I'm with so-and-so in Ohio or Kentucky or wherever you are. Hey, man, how you do your business? How you do your marketing? How you do this? Tell me about it. Tell me about it. Man, those people will open up. And all you do is just take notes and take notes.
Yeah. Well, and you know, here, one of the things that we started last year is, you know, because I ran mastermind groups for a couple of years or a few years, but they were small, you know, small groups. I did them. And starting last year, we opened it up. I brought in other facilitators and we run these groups now. In fact, we have a meeting we're planning for now in a month. And that's just it. It's about being surrounded by other people and listening, asking questions, learning from other people's experiences. So you don't have to bang your head against the wall and figure everything out on your own. And it changes lives. It changes lives because you're not alone anymore. You don't have to figure everything out on your own. And
well, that's exciting to me, Brian. Yeah. You know what you've been doing over the years to help people because you can't figure it out on your own. No. It's very difficult.
And why? Yeah. We don't have enough time. There isn't enough time to figure it out on our own.
Yeah, buddy.
Anyway, my friend, well, let's leave it here. And we could keep going for hours. Hang out with me for just a second, though. But everybody listening, again, this is the third, I'm going to say it for the third time. But go back and listen to this episode. Joe rattled off so much good stuff that, you didn't catch it all. I promise you, you didn't catch it all. So go back, listen to this three or four more times and you will get gold every single time. So until next time, thank you, Joe. And, we will be back with more episodes. If you'd like, by the way, if you like this, share it with somebody. Send this episode to somebody that you think will benefit from Joe's message. Share it with other business owners. Subscribe to the podcast. And if you're getting benefit from it, please leave us a review so other people can go find it and listen to people like Joe and not have to do this all on their own and have to figure everything out on their own. So thank you all for being here, and I will see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.